Unionist politicians are not looking after working class Protestants. So claims Tony Blair's key man, his right-hand man in the peace process, Jonathan Powell. Here's what he said.
Sinn Féin have looked after their communities, the working class Catholic communities. SDLP have looked after their communities and the middle class Catholics. DUP and UUP have looked after the middle class unionists. But no one has looked after the working class Protestants trapped in their ghettos. No one has provided economic future for them. No one's given them leadership. So they're trapped with those gangs. They're trapped with the UVF and with the UDA. And no one is offering them a way out. And that's, I think, something that should have been focused on.
Well, we'll speak to the politicians in just a second or two. The community worker Jim Wilson with us this morning from East Belfast. Morning to you, Jim.
Morning, Stephen. Hope you had a nice holiday.
Thank you very much indeed. That's another story. But look, you've been saying something similar on this programme for many, many months, if not well over a year now. What's your assessment of how the loyalist community feels about leadership, about where they are?
Well, Stephen, I have been saying it, and it's been actually more than a year. It's been 2 or 3 years I've been saying it. To be quite honest with you, one of the things that when David Irvine was alive, I did say, was that in conversations with some of Tony Blair's advisors, that Tony Blair would look after the Sinn Féin and Hugh Orde would look after the loyalists. And if you analyse that out, that tells me that Tony Blair is a politician who wanted Sinn Féin to move politically, and Hugh Orde is a policeman who looks after criminality. So right away, the plan...
No, Stephen.
Right away, the playing field was uneven as soon as we moved from outside the gates of Stormont to the actual working of the Good Friday Agreement.
Hugh Orde, obviously, is one of the most distinguished police officers in the country, for goodness sake.
Listen to what I said. I didn't say anything about that. I'm saying that Tony Blair's office, people had said that Hugh Orde would look after the loyalists. And I'm making that as a statement that we were going to be criminalised because we were nothing but criminals. And that's the point that I'm making. You understand me? I'm not making the point that Hugh Orde. I'm making the point that if Tony Blair's advisor, Jonathan Powell, comes out and tells you that he's party the information, and David Irvine was told this by...
But have you been left behind? In what way have you been left behind in your community? Distinguish between you and the Nationalists. In what way have the Loyalists been left behind differently than anybody else?
You want an answer to it? I'm going to tell you something. The Secretary of State was on your programme last night.
We're going to hear from her in a second or two.
Yes, that's okay. She flippantly said, yes, there was no difference. There's been no difference in that there. I am telling you, there's a massive difference. There's a massive difference.
Spell it out. What is it?
Okay. Let's go into what you said last night. Let's go into one simple thing, which was we spent £120 million on an inquiry in the Lutton Dáil. We apologised, and we also then apologised to the Finucane family, all of this. These things that I've already said in your programme. Tell me whether the British government have given closure in my community in reference to some of this stuff about Bloody Friday at Le Mans and a Skilling, like Darkly. I could go through dozens of atrocities that happened to my community. Where has been the sort of hand from the British government? As though it never happened to us. And that's some of the stuff that's going on. And like the British government in the first 2 or 3 years of the Good Friday Agreement bent over backwards to keep Sinn Féin on board. Loyalism weren't capable and didn't want to bomb London or parts of the British establishment over in England.
Yeah.
So therefore, they had to play footy.
And that's obviously important to your community, and that's about apologies. But in terms of on the ground, in terms of economic deprivation, in terms of the economic situation, is there any difference? Because this is what Jonathan Powell was going on about. He said that they feel that there's no economic future, that they feel loyalists feel trapped in their ghettos. Now, I'd like you to spell out for me how it's any different in terms of the economy, economic prospects, being a loyalist than being a nationalist. Where's the difference?
Well Stephen, I didn't say that. You know, you need to ask Jonathan Powell.
Do you disagree then? No,
I don't disagree with what he's saying. I'm telling you to get him to elaborate on that. What I'm saying to you is what I have seen over the years, and I can tell you now, I'm not being funny when I say this, even up to 2 or 3 weeks ago, we were being told by government ministers about the millions of pounds of funding coming into Northern Ireland, and something like £10 million out of a 14 million went into our nationalist areas as opposed to went into unionist areas. So the funding aspect, the working out of the Good Friday Agreement, the actual support and help of what they did for Sinn Féin in the early days, give them a big, big starter on loyalism.
Have you not got the biggest political party in the country the DUP representing unionism?
Well, Stephen, as he said, you know, a lot of loyalist people, when they became politicised, as you can understand, the DUP and the UUP were then their opponents, right? So therefore, in the process of the Troubles, and I said this morning, David Irvine could have put the cattle on for whenever it came up the election time and election mode, something would have happened within loyalism to make him unelectable or to make loyalist politicians unelectable. Now, you know, hidden hand, I call it, the hidden hand. Now, but realistically, when you sit down and analyse what that man said, why did the Secretary of State poo-hoo it? You know, let's look into it. And as you said, I would like to know, because I haven't got all the facts and figures, but I can tell you that what I feel on the ground is, you know, the infrastructure within nationalism, and I'm not condemning it because I believe Sinn Féin played the right game, they played their cards right, they worked within their communities, they worked from working class to middle class.
Are you telling me the DUP and the UUP haven't?
Well, I know they haven't, Stephen, and this is why the Unionist Forum...
So let me ask you a straight question then. In terms of the DUP and the UUP, do you think they have let your community down?
Well, they did. Now, I'm hoping that they're stepping up to the mark now through the Unionist Forum. And I believe on a personal level that they have let my community down over the past 10 to 15 years. And that's a fact, and I have said that openly, and I spoke to Peter Robson and Mike Nesbitt, and I see now that they're starting to address it. And hopefully the Unionist Forum that has been set up is going to be the catalyst for us to be able to heal a lot of ills and pains within my community.
Well, let's speak to William Humphrey, DUP MLA for North Belfast. Well, you lot have messed up big time here, William. You've got a community that feeds it. You haven't led them. You haven't represented them. And now you've got Tony Blair's right-hand man backing them up.
Well, it's no surprise to me, Stephen, as a unionist, that Tony Blair's right-hand man would make such a sweeping statement on generalisation based, I think, on no facts. Let's be honest, the man's not a friend of unionism. He spent his time when he was working with the Prime Minister, the then Prime Minister, courting nationalism, running into the Felons Club and so on. And I'm not surprised that a left-leaning politician would choose to, you know, give his support or his acclamation to Sinn Féin and the SDLP. Remember, this is a man who invited Adams and McGuinness to his wedding.
Your party leader is working side by side with Martin McGuinness. Your whole party's working with Sinn Féin.
Yes, in a mandatory coalition. And we would rather people in the nationalist community didn't vote in the number they do for Sinn Féin, but that's the reality.
But William Humphrey, you could argue that Jonathan Powell isn't actually sidling up to any nationalists. You could argue that he is fighting and fighting in the way that you should be fighting for the loyalist community. He is saying that they need more representation, that they need a better economic future, that they need a better way of improving their lives. That's the kind of language that the DUP should be using, is it not?
That's the kind of language that the DUP does use. And I mean, I think I would be closer to my community here in North Belfast in the Greater Shankill than Mr. Blair was in Sedgefield. You know, I live, work, and have always lived and worked in this community. I'm born and raised in it. I live less than a minute from my constituency office. And in North Belfast, for example, the Democratic Unionist Party provides 4 full-time constituency services right across from the Woodvale Road out to Glengormley. And we are delivering for our communities in North Belfast. And, you know, some of what Jim Wilson has said is absolutely right, and I wouldn't deny it. In the past, there have been issues. But the Democratic Unionist Party is on the ground working,
but
is visible, is active, and is delivering for the people.
Sure, but William, he hasn't just said, Jim Wilson...
Like, to be honest...
But William, Jim Wilson and others haven't just said there have been issues. Let's just nail what these community workers have been saying. They have been saying that they have not been represented, that political parties like yours have forgotten about them. You've been representing the middle classes. And indeed, Jim Wilson has said in the past, not too distant past on this programme, that the whole flag issue, that was just a tipping point, that it had been boiling for many, many months because you lot left them behind. You forgot about them. Now, do you acknowledge that?
Look, the situation is that the flag issue, if you want...
I'm talking about being a feeling within loyalism that they were left behind. Do you acknowledge that?
There are communities across this city and across Northern Ireland that haven't had the Stormont factor, or the feel-good factor. Now, the truth of the matter is that much has been done and much still needs to be done. But, you know, some of the people who come out and attack my party and the Ulster Unionist Party are actually political opponents, and we've now seen that they're political opponents. You know, the truth of the matter is we as a party are working to deliver for the people. Let me tell you, in North Belfast and working class areas across this city, Educational attainment is a major issue. And we've been lobbying with government. We have met with community workers here and educationalists in North Belfast to tackle this issue. We have put a manifesto to the Education Minister, delivered by my colleague Nigel Dodds, to address the issue of education in working class areas. Education in working class areas, for young men in particular, both in the Protestant and working class and Catholic working class communities, major issue. Also vocational training, so that young people are skilled up, because not everybody wants to or can go to university, you know, and we need to get those young people skilled up so that they are skilled up to go into the world of work and get meaningful long-term employment.
What I want to do this morning is hear from you on the ground, 08459 555 678. We're going to speak to the leader of the Ulster Unionist Party, Mike Nesbitt. Now, morning to you, Mike.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. Do you acknowledge, William Humphrey, he kind of sidestepped that question in terms of acknowledging that loyalism felt left behind. Do you acknowledge that you got it wrong?
Well, I'm not going to go for that kind of emotive language, Stephen. I think what I don't know is the context in which Jonathan Powell was speaking last night, because I didn't hear the documentary. My own context is to say, 15 years on from the start of this process with the Belfast Agreement, are we where we wanted to be? And the answer to that, very clearly, is no. I have five tests, and two of them are, do people feel better served economically, and do people feel better served politically? And I think, by and large, and the evidence from the Flags protest backs this up, is that the answer to those two tests is that, no, we don't. And for me, part of the answer is the Unionist Forum, trying to get the broad Unionist family around one table to identify and discuss the issues, to find out where we agree on what needs to be done.
Why not everybody around that table? Why just unionists?
Well, because it's a starting point, Stephen. And the focus that you're putting today out of this soundbite from Jonathan Powell is on the loyalist and unionist community. I have to say, when I came into politics, one of the first groups I met was a loyalist group down in Newton Arns, trying to do very good work in terms of working with ethnic communities on the Ards Peninsula, in terms of educational projects for children, and cross-community work as well. But their difficulty was they didn't have the capacity and the knowledge to even engage with funders, never mind to fill out forms, to draw down funds. And what I did was I took them across community to meet another group who taught them how to do it. And there is a well-recognized gap in the capacity on the two traditional sides of our community. In terms of engaging with the authorities,
Do you agree with Jonathan Powell in this regard? Do you think working class loyalists are worse off in Northern Ireland than nationalists?
No, I don't. I don't think the evidence is there. Now, you look at child poverty, Stephen. Children in poverty, some of them are too young to know whether they're Protestant or Catholic. And we have to recognise that while there are very serious issues on the loyalist, on the unionist side, there's also child poverty, deprivation, and major social issues on the nationalist side as well.
Well, that's maybe why all politicians should be around that table. The Northern Ireland Peace Monitoring Report for 2013, it was published earlier this month, it actually showed that the deprivation indices show that 22% of Catholics live in households experiencing poverty, compared to 17% of Protestants. 16 of the top 20 most deprived wards are, guess what, Catholic.
That's point I'm making to you, Stephen. And people, everybody is round the table because they're round the executive table, and everybody is gathered in the debating chamber up here at Parliament buildings. The thing
everybody's around the shared future table, are they?
Sorry?
Everybody's around that shared future table, are they?
Well, everybody is around the executive table. Everybody's working in the Assembly. There are big ticket issues that we have failed to address over the last 15 years, and I've been clear that there are three, and I believe they're interconnected, namely dealing with the past, reconciliation, and building that shared, future.
Morning to you, George.
Morning, Stephen. Stephen, I'm not on to demonise the DUP or the UUP. I'm not saying whether they were right or wrong, but I'm just on to give you cold, hard facts. You know, you asked Jim Wilson, I think it was there a while ago, to give you an example of where the unionist community is left behind. Well, I live here in the Shankill, and the heart's been ripped out of my community for 30 years. And there's been families moved on through redevelopment, well, supposing redevelopment, where the housing executive took over vast blocks of housing, and indeed flats, shops in the front of the Shankill, where they were knocked down and signs put up DRD, this is land acquired for redevelopment. That land's still lying empty 10, 15, 20 years later. You know, yesterday afternoon in the Shankill, there was three derelict houses.
Explain to me why.
That's what we need to know. As working class unionists, we need to know that. You know, see, 200 yards from me on the Cliftonville Road or an hour down or even the other way on the Falls, if there's an area becomes available at all, within a year, there's housing, there's apartments, there's shops, there's something put on there. You know, we're looking at this and we're seeing that. This is not me having an inferiority.
But I remember, as a young boy, I was up and down the Shankill Road with my mum and dad all the time. That road was buzzing. Is it not anymore?
No, Stephen, you see at 3 o'clock or 2 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon, it's like a Sunday where it used to be in the Shankill, it's empty, there's nobody on it. Stephen, from Sheffield Street up to the Labour there, we had big, lovely three-story shops which should have been preserved. They came in and knocked them down, promised housing, promised flats, all around Longbridge.
Who's they? When you say they promised it, who's they?
Well, I mean, it was government. I mean, it was government initially because they came in and invested the land, and it was government that has the signs up. The signs are still there, DRD for
but
redevelopment.
You've got your local political representatives. You've got the DUP, you've got the Ulster Unionist Party, you've got whoever you want.
Well, working class unionists need answers, and I think Jim Wilson said about the unionist forum, that's been set up to hopefully to get answers, you know. And another thing...
But you're talking about housing, right? But listen to this. Who's the social development minister? The DUP's Nelson McCausland.
Exactly, Stephen, and that's why we're going to have to ask them for answers. It's not in-house.
Stephen, can I provide some answers?
Go on, William.
Because I know George, and I know the point he's raising. Let me make it clear, whenever we took over the Department of Social Development, there was a clear policy there that had been led by the SDLP of new build housing led by the waiting list. Now, the truth of the matter is that in North Belfast, there was a clear swathe of areas, like parts of the Shankill, one example being the Lower Old Park, which is part of the court area where George lives. That was left, that's like something from the Blitz. That was left.
Exactly.
Yes, and that was left for years, and government did nothing. What we have done, and they're now on site working, is we're going to make sure 26 houses that have been lying blocked up for years will be reopened. There will also be investment in their new housing going in
26?
There. 26 that have
that's
been lying.
That's not
going to
transform the Shankill, is it? 26 houses.
Just hold on, Stephen, because the policy had to change when we took over from the SDLP, because the SDLP policy would not have addressed the issue. The other thing is that in terms of waiting lists in the Shankill, we now have waiting lists in the Shankill right across every ward in the Shankill, so that the housing issue is now becoming something which we can put pressure on the housing executive for investment. And of course, the housing executive no longer builds houses, housing associations build houses. And we're working with the ministers working to try and get the two local housing associations based in the Shankill that have unfortunately been unable to build, they've lost their development status, get them back into the position where they can build and new housing can start again.
Minister has... Hold on a second. Nelson McCausland has been in post for the guts of 2 years.
Yes.
You're talking about an SDLP policy. Your man's been in there for 2 years.
Yes, and we...
And you're able to talk this morning about 26 houses?
Yeah, No, I said that there are 26 houses that have been blocked up, have been brought. I use it as an example. We're building new houses in Tigers Bay. We're building new houses in Brookmount Street and Battenberg Street. We're building new houses in Spring Martin. We're pushing with housing developments right across the constituency. But the truth of the matter is, what the housing executive has to do is, instead of just respond to where there is waiting lists, it needs to look at how it regenerates areas, because previously it hadn't been doing that.